Blog Talk Radio.
Got a different kind of feeling this time, 'cause this ain't the situation I usually find. Gotta bring myself to realize that my current situation is about to unwind. Lately seems like I'm walking on air, as I ride the sensation like a new billionaire. Having trouble keeping my feet on the ground, 'cause I'm taking off the places. Concentration seems so compromised, 'cause the moonbeams I'm exuding are way too energized. Felt the gods had finally give up on me, now I'm levitating way beyond them high in a dream. My future started to look rather sad, but like a rocket on a launching pad. I just gotta believe that this could really be the start.
I would like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio. This is our Saturday night, June 17, 2017 show. My special guest is Rick Wormatka. Rick, welcome to the show.
Oh, nice to be here. Thank you for having me, John.
Well, Rick, you know what? The very first time that I had you on the show, this is your first trivia question. What year was that?
What year was it?
Yep.
I'm going to say 2011.
2009.
Oh, 2009. It was right after Beautiful Mess.
Yeah. And I was
right?
looking back. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I was looking back at my, you know, going through the archives, and I thought, gosh, we've had quite a few conversations with Rick. That's been awesome. So,
yeah,
that's good.
I'm like the Energizer Bunny. I just keep going.
I think that's the key. You know, you just keep showing up, doing your best, and, you know, putting your cleats on and doing what you can do. But tonight we're going
to... I'm talking to you on my cell phone from my Treehouse Central here. So I want to make sure that this connection is okay. Am I coming through okay?
I can hear you pretty good.
Okay, it sounds good.
It sounds like a cell phone connection, so we're good. Can you hear me okay?
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, good. Well, we got a lot to talk about. One thing I'd just like to say, Happy Father's Day, Rick. That's coming up tomorrow. So.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Are you a father as well?
Yeah, Marcy and I have 5 kids, so, and 9 grandkids.
That's great.
So we'll see what happens.
Wow.
yeah, it can get. It's just awesome. We love a big family. So.
I have 4,
really,
and plus a stepdaughter, which makes technically 5.
Yeah, there you go.
No,
that's awesome. Yeah, well, you got time. And but thanks for coming on. It's always great to talk to you. Even though the Dodgers are beating the Reds again, which is like, I can't believe that's happening again. But anyway, we'll get past that. We always do. But the new album is Shades, and it's Ruby Free, and we want to talk about that and play that tonight. So we want people to be able to listen to the songs, and know, you know, where they came from, I think it's always good when we talk to you, Rick, because we always kind of get into, you know, where the songs came from and what you were feeling when you were writing the songs, and that to me is why we do this show. You know, it's people can listen to music anywhere, but I think it's always a great idea to talk to the artist and find out, you know, what they're feeling. And I think, one of the things, Rick, we've been talking about on this show in the last couple of months is how important art is right now. I don't think
right.
in my lifetime I've seen it where it's has any more importance on a civilization than it does right now. And
I agree with you. There's so much going on right now in the world and in this country that, yeah, it's a great time to be an artist.
It's a great time to be an artist. It's a great time to express yourself. It's a great time to create things, create music,
right.
You can create a feeling. And when you were putting these songs together, Rick, for the Ruby Free album, Shades, talk about that and how it came to be and how long did it take you? Did you have like a nest of songs that you were using, and then some of them you had to use and some not? Was there a theme going on with it? Talk about how it started out.
Well, it didn't start out with a theme, but it kind of had a theme after I got going. But most of the songs I wrote in a hotel room up in Fresno, if you could believe that, over a weekend, the majority, I would say, or up in, say, maybe half of the album. And I was visiting my daughter, and, you know, she was working part of the time. So while she was working, I would just stay in the hotel room with my guitar. And, you know, sometimes you get those little sparks where it's just the songs are just flowing, and other times you're very blocked up and you can't write anything. So I just took advantage of the fact that the songs were coming, and a lot of good sketches by the time I left there, and then just started working those songs out, and then added several after the fact. And but the album Shades, the whole theme came about basically with just, you know, life's ups and downs. It's not always sunny. It's not always dark. There's light and dark, and we all go through the good times as well as the bad times. And I sort of wanted to sort of portray that in some of the songs.
When you're writing the songs, and you were saying you were kind of isolated a little bit when this was happening, have you, through your songwriting career, Rick, and the many songs that you've written, do you know pretty much what it's going to take, or you know, to have that artistic flow? Or is it just come out of the blue and you're really not sure where it's going to come from when you start feeling like, oh my, here's a song, here's an inspiration for a song?
Well, usually when I'm hammering it out on an acoustic guitar or a piano, I can already hear it fully fleshed out in my head. I mean, I can already hear what it could be. So what you do is you sort of chase that. You hear it in your head, and then you start chasing that sound that you're hearing in your head. As far as the lyric goes, a lot of times the lyrics come later. As you're fleshing it out and as you're adding the lyrics and as you're recording it, sometimes it does take on a little bit different form than what you were originally starting out with. But that's okay, too, because, you know, that's all part of the creative process. It's just that's the fun artistic part of, I think, songwriting, is because you never know exactly how it's going to end up. I mean, you can go for a particular sound and make sure you follow that sound all the way through, but, you know, that's not as fun. That's not as much fun, in my opinion. I think, you know, if you feel like you want to, you know, take a left turn somewhere, it makes it a little more interesting, and that's a spontaneous thing, so technically that would be considered art, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. With your projects, with Maple Mars, with your solo stuff, with Ruby Free. Now, when you're writing, are you writing within that, saying, okay, this is gonna be Ruby Free, this is gonna be Maple Mars, maybe I'll do this just under my own name? How do you know that, or do you start off with that, thinking we're gonna go this in this corral?
Actually, sometimes I mix and match. Sometimes I don't know. A free album, you know, I have my mind set on recording. It's usually whatever the next album is that I want to do. So, you know, the next album I want to do actually is probably a Maple Mars album. So now some of these songs that I'm starting to write, I'm gearing towards that band. And we have a sound. I know what I like to sing about with that band. Ruby Free is more of a different vibe. It's a little bit more retro, you know, 70s. You know, I'm always thinking Fleetwood Mac and Wings and those kind of bands. And I sort of get in that mindset, I guess. But you know, I write about, you know, relationships and what's going on in my life. And sometimes with Maple Mars, I'm not always writing about me. I write about other things. It just depends. And then the solo stuff is kind of all over the map.
Yeah, so, that's always – yeah, that's cool. How do you – do you ever think, Rick, that, like you were saying, you were in a certain place when you started to write the songs for this album, kind of alone in that way? Do you think geography or where you are has anything to do with the songs that you're writing? I've known people that will go to a certain place because they like the feel or the vibe of that place, where geographically – I guess it inspires them because of where they are. Is that a part of your songwriting or not?
I think it can be. I wouldn't say yes, it is, because, you know, just being in a boring hotel room, you know, doesn't really spark much, you know, many ideas, but the point of that was to sort of get away from everything and shut myself off so I can unblock, you know, and
right.
Try to and see if I can let the creative flow come out. But yeah, if you're sitting on a beach in Hawaii, hell yeah. I mean, I'm sure you can get, you know, I mean, Jeff Lynne wrote, I guess, most of Out of the Blue, up in the, I think it was the Swiss Alps, you know, in a beautiful environment. So yeah, he was very influenced, I think, by where he was writing. But it can work either way. You can go for something very tranquil and peaceful, and maybe you'll end up with a peaceful album. I don't know. I haven't traveled to that many places with the intent on songwriting. And with this trip, I just happened to bring my guitar, and I knew I'd have some downtime. So I just happened to sort of realize. See, that's the thing about when you write, you know, you have to realize when it's working and when it's not. I mean, you can force it, and it's like, you know, trying to like, you know, riding your bike uphill constantly. It's you know, every now and then you want to ride downhill and just coast a little bit, you know. And it's probably a bad analogy, but you know, knowing when the faucet is running and when it's not running, and taking advantage of when it is, and you know, so it's just tapping into that. And if you're lucky, you know, you can write a couple good songs.
Now, when you're writing, this might sound like a weird question, but this is something I've thought about a couple of times. It's happened with me, but it's more apt to happen to me because I'm limited musically. I can play certain chords and things like that, but I'm not great. But I was thinking, like with you, when you're writing songs and you were talking about hearing parts of those things in your head and you could hear things like that. Have you ever been surprised by the chords that you're hearing and thinking, oh, how do I get that from my head into a piano or a guitar? Does that make any sense?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, it makes perfect sense because sometimes you are hearing things. I mean, a lot of times right before I wake up, sometimes I'll be dreaming a song. And I'll run over to the guitar and try to figure out what was that I was hearing in my head. And I'm rarely successful. You know, what I'm hearing is usually the most amazing song. And I'm thinking to myself, God, if I could only remember that song, that would be my big break.
Yeah.
You know, it's so funny. It's like that fleeting, it's like it'll never happen. But it has happened a couple times. I mean, I have although the song was never as good as I initially thought it was, but, you know, I have been able to somehow sometimes, you know, have a dream and then wake up and do that. But, you know, other times, you know, especially at the piano, because I can play my stuff, but I'm not a proficient piano player. And so I'll just sit there and I'll be playing my chords and I'll just start throwing different voicings together. And, you know, I technically don't know exactly what I'm doing, but sometimes a voicing will come up or a chord will pop out that I wasn't expecting, and then you go with that.
Yeah,
with the guitar,
cool.
It's a little different, but every now and then, even with the guitar, a lot of times with the guitar, I'll just pick it up sometimes, and that very first riff that I play, when I first pick it up, I'll just start noodling around. Sometimes that's the nucleus of a tune. All of a sudden I'll just recognize, oh my God, that sounds like that could be a song. And then you'll just build off of that. So there's different ways. There's 400 ways to skin a cat. Actually 401, I think.
Yeah, it's at least. Do you think that when you're writing and you've got, you know, quite a catalog of music that you put together and you've got a sound and you know what your sound is, and although you have Maple Mars and Ruby Free and different things, is there ever a time, Rick, when you're playing and you're thinking, man, this is like outside of anything I've done. I don't know if this is where I want to go with this because this isn't with people that are familiar with my sound. Have you ever experienced that?
Yeah, I've experienced it, but I haven't shied away from it. I mean, you know, I know what I like and I know what I don't like. And as long as it's making me happy, then, you know, taking chances and trying to get out of your own shell, I think is a really good thing. That's how you grow. Just doing the same thing over and over, which is why I have two different bands and then I do solo stuff, is I don't want to do the same thing over and over. I want to, you know, change and evolve. And you know, my last solo album was very sort of psychedelic, you know, but the next one I do might be totally different. You know, I don't know that I want to do the same thing over. So, yeah, I think it's good to have those feelings where it's like, oh God, you know, what is this? This doesn't really sound like me, but so what? You know, let's keep going with it because it sounds good to me right now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about because, you know, I've said this before on different shows about when I heard an interview with Jeff Tweedy of Wilco and they were asking him about how he writes music. And he said that he's not real sure how it works either, but he said, you got to put the work in, you got to really study, you got to know your chords, you got to practice, you got to practice all your instruments, you got to listen, you've got to be aware of what's going on. You got to put all the work in, and then that goes into your subconscious. And then that can come out like when you would least expect it. And I think when you were talking, Rick, about the dream part, maybe that's where that could be part of that, because all of this is in your subconscious.
I think after a while, it's like after a while. I mean, I drove a cab in L.A. for several years, you know, way back when I first moved to L.A. In my 20s. And you know, I still have dreams every now and then about, you know, trying to find a fare, believe it or not. And, I mean, it was so many years ago. But, you know, whenever you spend time doing anything, you know, that's labor-intensive, I think, or you know, you spend so many years of your life doing something, you know, obviously it's going to be driven into your subconscious. So if you're writing songs from the time you're, you know, 15 years old, obviously you're gonna dream about that. You're gonna have ideas, and as long as you don't quit, or even if you do quit, you're still gonna probably think about it from time to time. So that's just a natural thing. Now, what you're saying about Jeff Tweedy saying that you have to do the work, yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know that you have to be an accomplished musician or study anything though to write a song. Anybody can write a song. It's just, you know, whether it works for you and whether other people like it. I mean, that's maybe where the work comes in. But, you know, it depends on how far you want to take it, how dedicated you are. And if you are writing it to make other people happy or just yourself or a little of both, that's where the work comes in, I think.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, it's like, you know, you know that it's got to be something that you feel comfortable with, but also you want somebody, you want to share it with somebody.
Yeah.
Who's
it's
the first person?
Sometimes I got to tell you.
Oh yeah.
There's times where it can be like pulling teeth, and that's when I stop. You know, that's when I actually try to stop and just say, look, this. If I'm trying this hard to make this verse work with this chorus or whatever, then maybe it's just not happening. Maybe it's time, or maybe I need to go play basketball, or maybe I need to go for a swim or something. You know, there's times where, you know, and that's probably where he's talking about the work, Jeff Tweedy, because, you know, sometimes it doesn't, you know, you hear these stories about Elton John writing these amazing tunes in, you know, between 5 and 20 minutes. I think he's very much that same way, where if it's not working, you just abandon the idea, because, you know, if you got a slave over it, it's probably not all you think it is. But if it's just, you know, coming out of thin air, where sometimes it feels like it does, then you know it's probably working. So and then the work part is just sort of fleshing it out and following it through at that point.
My
you know,
guess
arranging
is Rick,
and that kind of thing.
Yeah. My guest is Rick Remonka, the latest album from Ruby Free of Shades. And what's the website, the best website, Rick, that people could go to get your music?
Well, there's two. There's rubyfreeband.com. They can get the album there, and they can also get it at CD Baby. So you can just basically search Ruby Free or just search Ruby Free Shades on CD Baby, and you can find it right there.
Okay. Now, we started off today's show with the start of something big, and I really like that song. Can you talk about that a little bit, how you wrote that and where that came from?
Yeah, I wrote that when I was about 23 years old, 24 maybe, and that is not one of the songs I wrote in the hotel room. There's two songs on the album that I wrote very, very, very long time ago. And in my early to mid 20s, and one of them is the last song on the album, which is Time Without Numbers, and then the start of Something Big I wrote even before that, and that was sort of the same kind of vibe. I mean, it's got this sort of 80s vibe to it. So, you know, you know, I just sort of forgot about it for a long time, and then you know, I had sort of gone through some songs, and it was one of the later songs that I brought in. And I have a bunch of cassettes of, you know, song sketches from years ago, when people used cassettes. And that song had been around, and I actually played it in a band way back in the day. You know, I just never really finished it or saw it through, and I always thought it was a nice title. So I just decided to finish it. So that's sort of how it came about.
Oh, I really like it. And it's just got it's a real catchy song. Now, you wrote that when you were younger. When you listen to something now, Rick, and when you wrote something some years back, does that bring back like nostalgia or where you were at that time? Because I'll listen to a song or sometimes I'll interview somebody that wrote a song and they'll say how vivid that time period is for them when they hear the song. Does that work with you?
John, this is why I like doing interviews with you, because you really get in depth and you ask some great questions and you make it really fun. Because I don't even think about this stuff, and you sort of make me think here. Anyway, to answer your question, I don't really, I sort of remember the time, but I don't get nostalgic about it because now the song is now. Like, you know, the song was conceived years ago, but it's been updated. It's been sort of cleaned up. It's now a new song. It's almost like an original song, or if you were to do a cover and then totally redo this cover tune to make it your own. That's sort of what I was doing. And I just tried to keep some of the attitude that was in there at the beginning. But I think, to answer your question, no, I don't get that nostalgic about it, because I feel like this is sort of a new dressing and this is today.
I like the fact that you're covering your own songs. I like that.
Well, I feel like, especially Time Without Numbers, that changed big time from what it originally was. And again, I like the title. I like the first couple lines of the song. I didn't change, but I pretty much rewrote everything else. And it's an entirely new song, but I just used the old song as a stepping stone to lead me in a direction. And it's pretty easy, once you have that. The hardest thing is coming up with a concept and, how the vibe of the song. And, it's just a fun process. As I said before, it can be a little painstaking, because there is that time where it's working, but you want it to be better. And it's like, all right, do I settle for this? Is this good enough? Or should I keep searching for a different, B part before the chorus? It's a thing every songwriter goes through, but you can definitely beat a horse to the point where it's not going to walk anymore. Another bad analogy, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
You can run an idea into the ground, and so that's where you need to know, okay, this is good, I'm going to leave it alone now.
That's always a question I like asking, because it's like, I know people that can go into a studio, and I've done some just recently talking to some people about Rory Gallagher and some of the way he would go into studios and work, and how that they would knock out songs quick. I mean, it could be one or two takes, maybe three at the most, but they would go in and just be focused and just do it. And then I've talked to people that you were talking about, Elton John and some of these guys, that nothing is ever perfect, and they just one more take, and let's try one more take, and that's a little off, and if you could please do this. When do you know, Rick, that that's okay, let's stop, this is it? When does Rick Romica know that this song is ready? Let's let it fly.
When I feel it's not embarrassing to play in front of others, I think that's when I know it's ready. Because you're always critical of your own voice and your own songs, and so for me, I just want it to be as good as I can without overcooking it. And there's been times I've been guilty of it. I've been very self-indulgent and tried to throw in the kitchen sink into the mix and overmix things, and we all do that. I mean, it's part of the growing process, and you just try to do it less as you go on. You learn from your mistakes and you move on. I mean, I listen to stuff that I've done in the past that I'm like, wow, that's a really good idea, and I like that song. I just wish I recorded it a little differently. I wish I had done this. I wish I had done that. And that's part of the process. You learn as you go, and you try to use those experiences to move forward with.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because it's always like you can never say it's perfect. So you just got to think this is good and let's go forward with that. Now, I know you work with different musicians on this. Can you introduce the people you worked with on Shades and maybe go through that and what they did and contributed to the album?
Sure. Well, the first one is my wife, Lisa. Lisa Cavalier. I think I told you the last time we talked, she's never been in a band or anything. She was just a choir girl in high school and college. And she always had a really nice voice, and I always wanted to do something musically with her. And so that's how the first Ruby Free album came about. And so I sort of rope her in to sort of see this little vision I have of us having this band that doesn't play very often, but we like to record. It really actually started out though with the drummer, Jim Lespiza. I was doing, around 2011, I was doing some work for hire for a music publisher, and they wanted a certain kind of, they wanted these songs that they could play on, in bars, that I think they were looking for something along the lines of the Black Keys and Jack White and that kind of stuff. And so I just wrote some really quickie song ideas together, and I brought Jim into the studio to play some of the stuff. And he did such a great job on it that, it got me thinking. And then when I was doing the Ruby Free stuff, I just called him up and see if he wanted to come down and play on some of the stuff. And it gelled really well. And so he's been the drummer on the first album, Introducing Ruby Free, and on Shades as well. And we actually get to hear him sing a little bit on this album, which was really cool. And then there's Joe Giddings, who is I knew from – now. Well, I should say Jim Lespiza toured with Dave Davies and Susanna Hoffs, and he plays in the Wild Honey Orchestra here in L.A. and plays with a ton of people. He's great, great drummer, great guy, very talented. Joe Giddings, I met basically over the internet. He's a brilliant guitar player, songwriter, singer, played in a band called Star Collector in Atlanta. And they did some touring, national touring. And then he's actually probably posted well over, I want to say 200 videos on the YouTube through this music group that he's involved with called Theme Music, which I've done some things for as well. I don't know if you're familiar with that Facebook group, but
I'm
it's
not.
A bunch of musicians from all over the world that have a theme every week, and they have to either write a song or do a cover within this theme, which is really interesting and sometimes a lot of work. But Joe's done some really, really brilliant work with that. And so I knew him from that, and then he moved to L.A., and we ended up playing together, and as a result of him playing with me, he's actually playing with another great band in LA called Marizane, who Todd Yeager is sort of the leader of this band. Well, I shouldn't say sort of, he is the leader of that band, and they're very eclectic and showcasing Joe's talents. And then there is Rick Gallego, who I don't know if you know him, but he has a band called Cloud 11, or he put out albums under the name Cloud 11. And Rick's very, very gifted songwriter and singer, and a bit of a studio whiz, and was signed to Delphi Records back in the early 2000s, or late 90s, early 2000s, through Bob Keane's label. Bob Keane was the guy who signed Richie Valens. And he's made some great albums, very psychedelic, kind of almost, I won't say baroque, pop, but psychedelic, soft rock, I guess, is the best way to describe his music. So I got really lucky. I have some really talented people that that helped me on this album, and I tried to make this album more of a band affair. And I think it comes through. Joe did some great, great work. Guitar work on the album, and Jim Lespiza played some great drums, and Rick Gallego actually played some pedal steel on the album as well as bass, and it was a really nice experience, to say the least.
Yeah, it definitely worked. I want to play a song that Lisa sings, "Superstar," and you and I have talked in the past, and you like to put covers on some of your records. Why did you pick this song? And let's just start there. That's a pretty good song. I mean, that song is one of those songs that I've never really thought too much about, but when you listen to it and Lisa does a great job on it. And I want to know why you picked that. And then I'm going to ask you this other question about how you feel when you hear Lisa singing that.
Well, basically, we were playing a live show and I wanted to do, a cover song that, in a live show that Lisa could sing, because we were singing, she was singing some of the songs from the first album that she had sang on. But I wanted one other song that I could feature her on. So I played her, "To Sir With Love," which she wasn't really familiar with, from Lulu, which is a favorite of mine. And I've sang
that song. Yeah, that's a great
song. In the past. And she wasn't digging it, you know. It didn't really move her. I mean, she has a different taste. She likes country. She's not so much on some of the earlier music that I like. She's not so into it. But I knew her parents were Carpenters fans, and I knew she liked the Carpenters, and I knew that she knew "Superstar." So when I sent her that song, and I said, "What about this one?" She was all over it. And so she loves Karen Carpenter, and it was a natural for her. And then the band, you know, performed it so well live that I, you know, when I was making the album, I said, "We got to record this. This should be on the album." And so we got Proben Gregory to play French horn and trombone.
Oh, wow.
On the album. Proben's from Brian Wilson's band. And then
yep.
A friend of mine, a great horn player by the name of Josh Wood, played trumpets. And yeah, it really came together well. And Lisa was a stickler. She laid a great vocal track down, and she would never settle. I kept telling her, "Oh, this sounds great." And she goes, "No, we could do it better." So we did several sessions it took several sessions for her to be satisfied with her vocal, which was great, because her being not being a, you know, quote unquote professional musician, she was definitely more professional than I would have been. I would have been like, "Okay, that's fine."
Now,
so.
When you're working with Lisa on that vocal and you're hearing it, I mean, does that strike an emotional chord when she's singing it? Because this is just me, but this is like, I think one of the most incredible ways for human beings to communicate emotionally and really communicate emotionally is through singing. Because, man, you get down to a pretty raw place. And where it's kind of hard to BS anything, and you hear somebody that you have a relationship and you care about singing, man, that just gets to me every time. I just wondered how that was with you.
You know what? I'm in agreement with you. When I hear her sing that, every time it does move me. It really does, because I know how much work she put into it, and I just hear. You know, this is going to sound really, really sappy and really, but I sort of fall in love with her all over again when I hear her sing that song, because it's just so sweet, and it sounds like it's coming from her heart, and she just sounds great. You know, it's really, I'm almost you know, prideful, or it's that, maybe that's not the right term. I'm just it actually does sound loving to me when I hear her sing it.
It's really, really emotional, and it's just like when you go hear your kids sing at a play or something, it just freaks me out, man. It's just like, wow, I don't know if I can put it together, because it's you know, it's a part of you, and it's just incredible. Let's play it. This is "Superstar" from Ruby Free's latest album, Shades. My guest is Rick Romatka. We're going to be right back with Rick after this, and enjoy this. It will be "This is Superstar," starring Lisa, and we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
On John Talk Radio. I'm your host, John, and I'm with Rick Romaka tonight, and we're talking about Ruby Free's latest album, Shades. We just heard Superstar from Lisa Cavalier, a beautiful rendition of that, and it's really cool. You said Problem plays that part of the horns there. That's pretty cool. That's really cool. But it's a great album, and it is. It's just cool. Talking to you, are you still in the treehouse?
I'm sitting in the treehouse and it's swaying. We actually built the treehouse right into the tree, so when the wind's blowing, it actually does creak a bit, and it does. You can see it. It's on the back of the Ruby Free album, I believe. I put a picture of the inside of the treehouse, and the tree actually grows right through the back of the treehouse. So we built the treehouse actually around some of the tree. So it's very cool the way that it happens. But yes, it's a very nice, peaceful place to hang.
To hang out, actually, in a tree.
Yep.
Well, that's cool. Well, Rick, let's see. What's anything new going on? Any new projects or any new gigs or anything you'd like to talk about that's happening?
Well, the Maple Mars band, we rarely play, but we just did a tour of the East Coast last May, and it was from May 1st. We actually did 6 shows in 6 nights, all on the East Coast, 2 in New York City, upstate New York, Boston, Connecticut, and D.C., and And that was just kind of a fun thing. I was sort of itching to get back there. I'm from Connecticut originally, so I wanted to go play my hometown. I had done a solo acoustic thing back there a couple of years ago, and that went really well and was fun. I also played up in Boston, this really fun place, and they wanted to have me come back with the band. So I came back with the band. It was a nice, first time I had gone on the road with the band and, in 6 years. The last time was we went to England, the UK. We played all over the UK and Scotland. So it's been a while, and it was really fun. I mean, a lot of work, but a great deal of fun. And the band sounded really, really good because we rehearsed a lot, and then just playing all these shows in a row. By the time we were done, I was ready for more, you know. And so, yeah, we're playing a show in August, and then we're going to try to do possibly some more touring, maybe later in later this year or next year. I would love to go back to the UK, and then we'll talk about maybe Spain. You know how it is. It's just a lot of planning and a lot of emailing, and then getting the time
yep.
off. Because we all have to do other things, so it's really about that, getting the time off to do this stuff.
Right.
But
yeah.
In the meantime, we're talking about recording, and you know, I've been writing some songs for that band. We haven't put out an album since 2010, which was Galaxy Land, and you know, the guys are all into it, and you know, I'm into it. So it's about coming up with the right material, and when the time is right, we'll go in and record it. The guitar player Steve Burns has a really nice studio in his home. So we probably do most of it there, even though I have this I have my own home studio as well. He's got better gear, so we'll go to his place.
He wins.
Yes.
Let's just take a minute to talk about the gear that you use. And I started last week with a new show on John Talk Radio Gear Talk, and we had Tom Guerra on, and we were really had a great time. And I'd love to have you to come on and just talk about gear. And what we do is, Rick, we take one, like your what would be one of your favorite albums of all times, and we would just break it down and play the songs and talk about the gear and all that kind of stuff. So I'd love to have you come on.
Oh, that sounds great. I would love to do that. That sounds like a really fun, you know, that's a music nerd like me would be all over that. And plus, I also do recording, or not recording, I should say, but mixing. I work at DreamWorks. I'm in-house
right.
sound mixer there. So I have good equipment that I can work with, and then sometimes not so good equipment that I work with, like at home, for example. Actually, that's not true. I have some good stuff at home, but it's nothing on the level of what some guys have.
Now, what's your prize guitar that you have that you just like? That's your baby. Do you have one?
There are some guys that have a million guitars and they're into these classics, and believe me, I am too. The problem is with me, I just had kids. I had too many kids. And so for me, it's really hard for me to rationalize going out and spending a lot of money on a really, really nice guitar. I mean, the last really nice guitar, that I received was actually from my wife as a birthday gift, which was a Gibson SG guitar I've always wanted, and that's by far the most expensive guitar I've ever owned. And I love that guitar, but I think I'm partial to the Fender Tornado that I bought, I think, in the mid '90s. It's this red
wow.
guitar that looks sort of like a Fender Jazzmaster, and it's just a funky, you know, very sturdy guitar that I don't know. I just it sounds good. It doesn't sounds like a Fender, but not over the top. It doesn't sound like a Strat at all or anything like that. It's got just got its own sort of unique sound, and it's real comfortable to play, and it looks cool, and that's been my go-to. And I think that guitar new back in the '90s was maybe $400 or $500. So
yeah.
sometimes it really doesn't matter as long as, you know, there are guitars I want. I'd love to have a Gibson Firebird. I've been after one of those for a while, but I have to sort of justify spending the money on something like that, you know, because there's always gear that I want. You know, I'm always buying stuff for my studio. And, you know, you could just go crazy with this stuff, especially with all the vintage gear out there that you can go with.
Yeah, it can be really addicting. There's no doubt about that. I saw a Gibson Firebird, actually two of them at a yard sale once, and I didn't buy them.
Really?
This guy was a musician in Columbus, Ohio, and he was going through some rough times and needed some money and had them out on his front yard. And I was driving by in my truck, and I looked and I thought, I couldn't afford them at the time either. So it was one of those things where I probably, and I thought, no, yeah, come on. Just keep
going. Yeah. I mean, it really is a personal thing. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I was having a conversation with somebody about this a couple weeks ago, and it, you know, it really doesn't matter the gear you have, the guitars you have. I mean, it really doesn't. I mean, obviously if you have better gear, you sound maybe a little bit more polished if you're a good player per se, but you know, it has nothing to do with the creative aspect. And you know, you're not going to write a better song if you have a better guitar, or you know, you may be inspired, but you know, you can get inspiration anywhere. It doesn't have to be from a nice shiny new object. And so, you know, gear, and I think you can make great recordings with very, very little. You don't need, you know, all the classic vintage gear. You don't need, you know, the best DAW system. You know, you can make anything sound good if you put, you know, if you have good ears and you put some time and effort into it, you know. And sometimes things that don't sound so great actually do sound great because it's not perfect, you know. And you do what works for you. I mean, you work within your budget, and if you do something that's honest and you're putting some effort into it, I'm sure other people will notice.
Yeah, that's a good point. The honest part is huge. I think it's so cool to when you hear an honest musician or somebody like you're talking about with art, you can connect with it and you know immediately where it's coming from the heart. It's just that's a very rare and precious thing.
Like earlier in the conversation, you're talking about Rory Gallagher going in and just, you know, banging things out and working very spontaneously in the studio and just banging songs out in two takes. And, you know, cool. I mean, he's that kind of musician, and he's it's sort of a snapshot of those moments. And that's great. There's other musicians that basically work in the box and, you know, on the computer, and they'll tweak it forever. And you know what, if that's the sound that they're going for and that's what they want to achieve, that's okay too, because, you know, in both cases, they're doing totally different things, but they're doing what they love and they're doing,
right,
you know, honestly. That's what I'm talking about. I think if you get to a point where you start out and you want to do something spontaneous and then you spend all this time fixing it in your DAW system, you know, in Pro Tools or Logic or whatever, and you spend, you know, days, weeks, months, you know, perfecting something that you meant to be spontaneous, then that's not honest. That's what
right.
I thought when I'm talking about honesty. I mean, just following your heart and doing what it is that you do.
Yep. That's a great point. Well, Rick, it's been great talking to you again. It's always great. It's always fun. Every time.
Yeah, like I said, John, you always ask the best questions, and you know, you always hit me with these interview questions that I don't hear from many other people, because you dive deep into the process, and I appreciate that, because you know, sometimes I discover things about myself that I didn't know until you asked. So
well, it's great to be able to talk to you about it, because your music, I really enjoy it. I've enjoyed it through the years, and I always look forward to the new records that come out. And thanks so much. We're going to go out with It's Not Your Dream. Can you talk about that before we play it?
It's Not Your Dream. Oh, yeah, It's Not Your Dream. So I was telling you about Joe Giddings, and he's part of this theme music group on Facebook. Well, I was actually more involved with it until I get really busy with the album, and then I pulled away, and I haven't really contributed to that group in quite a while. But when I was, they do this thing called Secret Santa, which basically around Christmas time, some unidentified member, they throw three titles at you, and if you choose to, you create a song out of that title. So I can't remember the guy's name, but somebody sent me a message with three song titles, and It's Not Your Dream was one of the song titles. And so I said, wow, that's a great title. And, you know, for me, that song wrote itself. It's like, okay, I already know what this song would be about. And it was easy after that. I just picked up my guitar and started playing some chords, and it that's one of those songs that just sort of, boom, it just came right out. And that's pretty much how it went. And it's actually the one song where I played everything on that song, including, you know, all the drums and all the instruments, because I had done it prior to starting the Ruby Free album. So, it was just a recording that I had, and I wanted to include it somewhere. So I just felt like I just thought I'd stick it on the album.
Well, thank you so much, Rick. Have a great day. Hope you make it out of the treehouse good. And don't jump. And we'll talk to you later. We'll keep our conversation going, and have a great evening. And I want to thank everybody that's kept Independent Showcase going for these years. This is our ninth year, and supporting independent musicians means a lot to me. And thank you so much, Rick, for being on the show.
Thank you, John. It's always a pleasure doing your show. A lot of fun.
We'll talk to you later. Have a good one.
Thanks for having me. All right. You take care.
You too. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
It's not your dream. I told you once before. Stay out of my head when I sleep. It's not your dream. Yeah.